This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. It's your host, Tim Link, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. We got a double header, double whammy, two super authors and writers and, of course, illustrators coming on the show to talk about the latest book. Of course, we're talking about Sudipta Barhan Qualan.
Qualan.
Hope we got that fairly. Mary Qualan, very close, very close. Who writes the books, and then Lisa Hernandez, who does all the illustrations. And then we're talking about the latest book, Hats and Conductor Hats. I love it. I love it. I love it. So we're talking a little bit about the book itself and then how it all came about. Not give away everything about the details of the book, of course, but it's a super fun book. And then we'll come back and talk a little bit about the writing and illustration. How does that go together? How in the world does all that happen? So we're going to pick the brains a little bit on that as well. So everybody, hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Hey, everyone. Brandon McMillan here, CBS host of Lucky Dog Reunions and Lucky Dog Down Under, and spokesperson for the 18th annual Cross Country Pet Adoption Tour. Get your licks on Route 66. Brought to you by Fido Friendly Magazine and campaign partner Tranquil Tales, along with media sponsor Pet Life Radio. The tour travels down America's favorite highway, supporting shelter events across America. With support of Tito's Vodka for Dog People, Hands On Gloves, My Place Hotels, KOA, and Signs to You. Attendees at each shelter event can donate to spin and win prizes from our sponsors, with all proceeds benefiting the shelter at the end of the day. Go to FidoFriendly.com to see where the tour stops near you. And who knows, you might just find your new forever friend.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now is writer, author, Sudipta Barhan Qualan.
Yep.
Close. Yay for me. Yay for me. And illustrator Lisa Hernandez. And don't feel bad. I mean, I try. Of course, my name is so simple, Tim Link, but you would be amazed how many people think, well, that's just too simple. We got to do something, you know, exotic. And I'm like, I'm not exotic. I'm basic. We're talking about the latest book, which is Cats and Conductor Hats, which I love. Love the title. Love everything about it. So tell us a little bit about the book and how it sort of came about.
All right. Well, I'll jump in first. So Cats and Conductor Hats is the second of our Cats books. So we already had Cats and Construction Hats in this universe. But when we're going back to it, you want to make sure that it is familiar enough to your readers, the readers who really liked the first book and became big fans. You want them to feel comfortable, but you also want to give them something new and something that they're still going to be interested in. Initially, with book two, we weren't actually sure which direction we were going in. Lisa and I had talked about a number of different things, maybe chef hats, maybe fancy hats, and all these other things. And it was actually our editor who thought the kinds of kids who would like construction, they'd probably be really into trains as well. And trains is just such a fun place to put these cats. And so that's kind of where the idea started. And then the story itself actually was a little bit more difficult to come together than the first book. With construction, it was kind of obvious. They're going to build something, and that's what they're going to do. And while on a train, obviously they're going on a journey, but how are we going to make them, you know, work as a team, as they did in the first book, and as is very important in this kind of, in the ethos of the series, right? How are we going to have them work in a team, but give them a different kind of adventure than the first time around? And so initially I was thinking, oh, maybe they're all on different trains and they all reach a choke point and then they've got to figure out how to go in turns. And then I realized, well, that's not actually how train tracks work. That's not a thing. And so the story then evolved into them taking different roles on the train, but then running into a problem outside of themselves. In construction hats, what they were building ended up in a disaster. Here, the train is running fine, but there's something else that ends up on the tracks that's keeping them from getting to their final destination.
Love it. I love it. I love it. And I love the whole journey. And we won't even tell you if it was a successful journey at the end or not. You got to read the book to find out for sure. So then, Lisa, the illustrations of the book, I love the fact that, you know, oftentimes we feel compelled as writers to give everything a name. Every character, every person, everything has to have a name. But right. It seems like in the book, it is more of orange cat, red cat, blue cat. And I actually love that because for the age group that's reading the book over and over and over again, and their parents are reading it over and over and over again, I would say that they would probably tune in more towards the color of the cat than perhaps the name. Was that what you were going for? Or am I totally off base on that?
Well, no, partially, I think, you know, even with the first book, the color concepts was definitely a part of the book itself and sort of these younger kids learning and making it right suited to like making it easier to follow along. And yeah, we don't want to give them, you know, Bob, Jerry, Sandra, character names like that. I mean, maybe in my head I've given them names like as I'm drawing them and illustrating them, but it actually helps with the structure of the book visually for me, having a little more freedom, right? So even though it's an orange cat, maybe I can add some spots or some stripes. It's not, you know, and I don't feel like I can give each of those cats their own personality without having these other character traits attached to them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the flow of the, you know, the hats with the cats. I mean, obviously that rhymes and that's catchy and I love that. But I noticed the different sort of even types of cats and how they are wearing their hats seems to be a yes. little bit different as well.
It actually took me a while to get the shape of the conductor hat down. Construction hats are easier to draw. I think it was just the angle and just making sure that it still looked like an old timey conductor hat of, you know, of yesteryear with that sort of nostalgic kind of flair to it, as opposed to sort of the more modern caps that you see conductors wear now. And I like that nod, you know, to something that's a little more retro, but it's kind of got this contemporary spin to it. So it did take me a while, though. I know I went through a lot of sketches to kind of really nail the shape of the cap with the peak. And I also learned that when you're at certain angles, the peak might disappear. So then it's like, okay, I got to adjust it slightly so that you can still see the peak. And so it still looks like a conductor hat. Otherwise, it just kind of looks like a pot on its head, you know? So it's small, tiny things. They're simple shapes. But yeah, it took a while to get the right shape down.
Lisa had to do a lot of iterations to get the shape of the hat right. But I want you guys to know, I spelled hat right correctly every single time. Hat, cat, this, that. I had them all down.
Yes, yes. But I love the fact that, you know, it's not that easy because you have to, when you're writing the book, you say, okay, we're going to have, this is me imagining this. The train is going up a hill. Okay, well, that's nice. I can sort of envision that. But then all of a sudden you hear the clickety, 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 clack. You know, so it's like, okay, now I sort of, you know, me, I'm reading through this and I'm thinking, now I kind of know what kind of train we're talking about here, you know, compared to if it was a, I don't know, so like a bullet train, it would be more of a Zoom train, or if it's a train from London, it'd be late to the station. No. Sorry, Lisa, I had to throw something in there.
You're not wrong.
I agree with you too.
Yeah. It's not bad to say as long as it's the truth. That's what we say. That's what we say.
And even actually the train was probably the hardest thing for me to draw for this book too. Originally, I had it, especially for the cover, we went through a lot of changes with that and redraws because I first drew it very sort of three-dimensionally and it just wasn't capturing the same spirit of the first book. And so I had to kind of go back, step back, look at other trains, look at older trains, look at old vintage, you know, retro train and things like that. And then eventually I realized it was because of the three dimension that I was trying to incorporate into the look of the train that was making it too realistic as opposed to stylized. So once I stepped back again and kind of reattacked it with this sort of more two dimensional, more shapes as a, again, shape focused as opposed to, you know, the realism, then everything kind of fell into place, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. I love that it gives, you know, a lot of depth and a lot of, like you said, dimension. I mean, it looks different than other things I've seen. And I was looking back on the cats and construction hats and I was trying to picture, are the cats the same cats as in the train, or we have a whole set, because I'm like, some of these cats look a little different. Was that A, am I imagining that, or is that spot on? And B, why are we changing cats? Because they have different jobs?
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't expect a construction specialist to also be an engineer on a train. I mean, that's a lot to expect of one poor little cat, right?
Well, nowadays you have to be multidimensional.
That is true. But, you know, we wanted to be sure we're expanding the world while still staying true to the world that was created. In the first book, on the construction site, there are all these little rats running around who want to be a part of the project too. And they eventually figure out a way to work as a team. And if you look in this book, the rats are there, they're back, and they have their own spaces, and they are part of this world. And just to kind of go back to something you asked about the colors of the cats, I wanted to say that, you know, books serve different purposes for different readers. And the readers of these books were going to be very young, and you want them to have a good experience. And so when you're a young child, and you're learning your colors, and you're able to point to red properly, and you're able to point to blue properly, it is a much nicer experience for you, that story. That story is bringing you success on many different levels. It's also, you know, it was written to be very rhythmic for that same idea, for emerging readers to start to feel how a book is going to sound, for them to start to maybe not read it to themselves, but start to kind of get the idea of how they would read the story if they were doing it by themselves. It's not the way you would write a story for an older audience, right? That would be a completely different process. But I think it's very important for, you know, the project that you create to respect the reader that you want to enjoy the story the most, right? And bring it to them where they are, not expect them to come to you.
Wow. I love that. I'm glad we have this on audio because I can steal all those wonderful lines you just said. That's fantastic. But it, I mean, that is very, very true. And I love the fact that you call it, you know, this book is the world of this cat. You know, it's more than a story. It's the life of the cats and the characters and all the things in here. So I love how you do that. And you're spot on the fact that writing to, whether we're talking about very young children, very young readers all the way up through the young adults, so on and so forth, you really have to know your segments, and those windows, age group windows are really small, you know, and kids nowadays are more, in my opinion, more in tune. They're more in tune with medium and seeing things that they progress a lot quicker than perhaps, and definitely quicker than in my day, but that's a whole different thing. Am I looking at that in a correct way?
I think you are. I think that there's a lot more competition for kids' time now and their attention. And so it's very hard with books because we're not animated and we don't have volume and we don't have all the bells and whistles that your iPad is going to have, right? So it's really important when you're creating books to be creating these experiences that kids will want to go back to in their quiet time on their own. Because if you don't raise kids who love to read, they are not going to grow up to be adults who love to read. If they're not reading for fun as children, they're not going to be reading for leisure as adults. And I think it's really important to have a community that is constantly trying to learn more about the world. And books are the way that we do this a lot of the time.
Yeah. Very good. I like it. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back and talk to Sudipta and Lisa a little bit more about the book Cats and Conductor Hats. And then I want to get down to the nitty gritty of how in the world do you work together? Because you guys don't live in the same house, I am assuming. Or do you? We'll leave it as a teaser.
That could be interesting.
Get a lot more books out the door, that's for sure. Or maybe not. Anyway, so we'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Or wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to Communicate with Animals is a four-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises as a method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit petliferadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's Talk Pets.
Let's Talk Pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now is Sudipta Bardhan-Kwalan and Lisa Hernandez. Boy, I'm getting close on both of those. Now, when I was reading through, this is an amazing thing to me because I know, I've been doing this show for almost 20 years now, and I've talked to a lot of different authors and illustrators and cartoonists and celebrities, these type of things, who are writing books for various age groups. And no matter what we're talking about, it's not easy work. Especially when we're talking about children's books, especially young children's books, as you mentioned, Sudipta, you had to catch their eye and their attention quick and try to hold it and then have them come back to it time and time again, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I know it's not an easy thing, but you have written 60 books for children.
It's more than 60. I think it's over 100 at this point.
Oh my God.
Published. Yeah.
See, I can't even do the math. I was going to say you started
because
and you were.
My bio just doesn't get updated. But yeah, I think I have over 100 that are published, that have been published. The problem is I have 3 children in college. Right. That's why I have to keep writing these books. tuition to pay.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I can appreciate that for sure. So then when did you get the notion, okay, children's books, we'll call it, put label into that. When did you get started in that? What motivated you to do that? Was it your children at a young age or was it much later?
Well, for me, before I was doing this, I was a PhD candidate in developmental neurobiology at Caltech.
And they go hand in hand.
As one does, right? As one does, right before they do this. But I, like you said, I had children in my life. My daughters were born 14 months apart. And after they were born, all of a sudden, I wanted to be home with them. But I wanted to have something that was mine. And I had it in my head that I could write with babies in the house, which was not a very smart idea because you cannot do anything with 2 babies 14 months apart in your house. Right. But it was only after I had children in my life that I discovered I had all these stories I wanted to tell them. And I thought that other kids would enjoy those stories too, which was also not a very smart idea because you cannot just decide I'm going to be an author now.
Right.
There's actually a lot of work and learning and failing and picking yourself up and trying again that goes into it. But that's where I started. So I basically got started after my second child was born. And when I first started writing children's books, I thought they were going to get published right away and I was going to read them at my daughter's preschool and I was going to be the coolest mom ever without having any idea that like it is such a long process. Even after you sell a book, it is such a long process. I literally had to have a third child just to have one that was willing to listen to my books at bedtime because my girls were so much older by the time my book started coming out.
I've heard of a lot of great plans to have another child, but I got that one. I love
that. There
you
go. Yeah.
And then Lisa, with your illustrations, obviously you're world renowned in what you do. You've worked with a lot of different folks with your illustrations. And it said here, I know this bio is going to be wrong, 25 books. That's probably more like 50 or more. How did you get started in all that? How'd you get in sort of the children's book realm?
That's a really great question. I don't think I'm close to 50 books, maybe 30, 35 or something like that, but not quite 50 yet. And certainly not over 100 like Sudipta.
So, he only has one child. That's what it is.
I only have one child.
More children,
yes.
More books.
My career, actually, I have a full-time job. I do the children's books and other forms of freelance illustration in my spare time. And my entire career has been working in newspapers and magazines as an art director, designer in the editorial side. And so I was doing a lot back in the late 90s, early 2000s, was doing a lot of editorial illustration. But it was at the same time when newspaper circulation was starting to decline. There wasn't so much need for illustration and editorial work at that time. And so I was looking for another creative outlet. And this is when blogging was really popular. Blogspot was the thing back then. And I discovered a website called Illustration Friday. They post one word prompt a week. You create an illustration, you post it, you share the link, and you look at everybody else's and you ooh and ah. And somewhere I fell down a rabbit hole and discovered the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. And I'm like, what is this? Illustrating children's books. Yes, that sounds great. And when I went to my first Oh, I signed up for the international conference in New York, and that was my first in-person event with the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. And the first night I went in with my portfolio, much thinking like with my little editorial work that I was going to score a book deal, you know, and have my New York Times bestseller overnight success. And I walked into the room with all these other portfolios, and much like Sudipta, you know, I almost turned around, went home and didn't go back. I was devastated and disheartened because they were such good portfolios. And I was like, I'm not even going to show my editorial work because it's not relevant. And so I realized at that moment I had a lot of learning to do, and I had a lot of research to do and homework. And so I spent a number of years, I think it was about 3 or 4 years before I signed with our agent. We both shared the same agent, Rachel Orr. And so it took that long just to even figure out what kind of children's book illustrator I wanted to be. But yeah, that's how I started. That's how I got into it. So
wow.
Almost didn't go back.
Almost went, you never, ever give up. That's it. You know,
that's it.
I always tell a story about the first book sign I ever went to. I won't go into all the details, but I was disheartened because I sold one book. And as I was leaving, they told me that I outsold I'll leave the major celebrity's name off, but I outsold them. Yeah, so they sold none, I sold one. So there you go. Success. But yeah, yep. This is the publishing world. I mean, it's a very competitive market even today, even though things have changed. And especially when you're talking about, you know, children's books in general, it's a hugely competitive market. And those that go into it thinking it like, you know, it's going to be so super duper easy, I can just whip these things out like that. You find out that, you know, even getting it put together, that's only one of the first steps in getting it out on the shelves.
Absolutely.
So then was it your agent that you shared that brought the two of you together and said, hey, we need to collaborate and do something here? Or was it more of, okay, I've got the words, who do you got that's got the pictures, and voila, it's magic?
Actually, Lisa and I have been friends for a very long time. We've known each other for a very long time, and we had wanted to collaborate for a long time as well. And now normally when you are putting a picture book together, it doesn't, unless you're an author illustrator, it doesn't really normally go in with art. Usually the text is sold and then the publisher will bring in an illustrator based on the text that they bought. However, we went through a period where I would write a story, and if it inspired Lisa, she would do a sample illustration for it, and we would submit that to publishers and see what they thought. And in a situation that I found very funny, but Lisa didn't find as funny, anytime she did a sample, my book would sell right away and they would hire a different illustrator. And that was almost 10 years of doing that before we actually got to a book called Roxy Loves Adventure, which is about a little black pug named Roxy, who happens to be my actual black pug named Roxy, who we dress in human clothes and pose her in all sorts of weird ways. And Lisa found Roxy very inspiring, and she really, really wanted me to write a story about Roxy. Now, Roxy's a pug, so she doesn't do anything. So I was very resistant to this idea for a long time. But as I tell kids when I talk to them at schools, you know how sometimes when your friend has an idea and they just won't stop talking about it and they won't be quiet about it, and you finally just do it because you want them to stop bothering you?
Right.
And then it turns out to be a really good idea, and then you have to admit that, and it's awful. That's basically what happened here. I was so resistant, but the moment I got into it, it was a great story. And then in that particular case, Lisa did some art samples, and we decided we were only going to sell that as a package. And that was our first book together. And then since then, we basically got 4 projects together, all together in just a few years after 10 years of fruitless collaborations.
That's amazing when you put all that together. And I love the fact that at the end of the day, you guys put together the package, said, okay, it's basically take it or leave it at that point. And I love how that builds up, because you're absolutely right. I mean, if your skill set's more on the writing side and not the illustrator, because not everybody does both. You know, very few of the authors I've talked to do both, or at least do both
absolutely
extremely well. So the fact that it gets pitched around basically on whoever the editor's favorite, you know, illustrator typically of the day is, that's where it goes. Yeah. And I love the fact that you guys stood together and said, okay, we've got something here, and we're going to present it, and, you know, basically take it or leave it. That's how I read it.
Cats and Construction Hats was also a package. It was actually a much more complex package than Roxy was. Roxy was just some sample character illustrations. Lisa, you did a whole dummy, right, for Cats and Construction Hats before we submitted it. So it was definitely even more of a package. There's no way we're going to break this up because it was a project actually that we went through a very different kind of process as well. Normally the author and the illustrator wouldn't work together, but this was an idea that really was something that we collaborated on from the very first kind of inklings of even writing the story, started up together, picking the images, picking the actions the cats were going to go into. These were things that I would discuss with Lisa, how I saw, how much text I saw per spread, how I wanted the story to kind of flow was something we talked about. And it was really very much a true collaboration, much more so than any kind of traditional other type of book that I do, where I almost, I don't even really get to speak to the illustrator very much.
Yeah, absolutely. So you talked early on about the pitching of ideas for cats in whatever hats it may be. And I see, I'm seeing so many of the cats and chef hats to me. It's like kids love, even at this age group, love food. And then they seem to be getting into it more and more. Is there going to be a full series on this? If not, editors, are you listening? Can you complete a 10 series package of cats doing various things in their hats?
Lisa, do you have 10 books in you? 10 times 32 pages, 320
cats,
illustrations.
As many books as you want.
If it's cats. And yes, outside.
I hope that the series continues. What's really nice is that, the Construction Cats came out last year, and then we've got Conductor Hats that just came out, but we also have Construction Cats in board book form now. So I feel like there's expansion, which is great, and hopefully Conductor will go that same way. And then, we do see a third book, at least in the series. But yeah, I would love to see this continue. But, we talk about this a lot, and it has to be right, right? It has to be the right story, the right setup, the world and everything that not only expands what we have already created, but as Sudipta said at the beginning, like something that brings something new and fresh for these characters as well, and for the readers too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love it for sure. And I want to see all of them. So,
me too.
One out a year, come back and see me. We'll keep it going. We'll keep
it
going.
That sounds great to me.
So the one last question is, when you put together this book, we'll say, what do you hope to accomplish? What is the thing that you're like, okay, here's my message, or here's what I hope that the reader gets out of it, and have the audience responded in ways that you never thought they would respond in a positive way?
That is a great question. I'll start. I think when I was writing this story, as I said, the first book in Conductor Hats, there's a big message about teamwork, but there's also in Construction Hats, this idea that you can work in a team, but that doesn't mean you're not good on your own. We wanted to kind of honor individual excellence while also saying you can have a different kind of accomplishment if you also work as a team. It doesn't have to take one from another. And I wanted to bring that theme back to this, but I did want to make it a little bit different so it didn't feel like the same story. And for me, the way this came about is the problem that the cats all have to face. The problem is that there's something on the tracks and how they have to get this thing off the tracks. But I didn't want it to just be a problem. I wanted it to be that there is this other character who's on the tracks who wants something else. And it isn't a matter of just getting rid of it so the cats can get what they want. It's finding a solution that works for everyone. So the cats have kind of expanded their message of teamwork, right, into this other, let's call it a bullheaded animal that is on the tracks, blocking their path, and find a solution that works for everyone, not thinking of other characters in your life as obstacles so much as people you can partner with, and so that everybody gets to where they need to go.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And Lisa?
Well, for me, I think it's the visuals, right? Like, I mean, I definitely echo everything that Sudipta is saying with regards to the teamwork and the story development and the characters. For me, as an artist, illustrator who's putting out the visuals for a story like this and trying to bring another dimension to it with other fun things like planting little Easter eggs and maybe burying a couple of little visual jokes in there or sweet moments and things like that. So, for example, if you take the jacket off the cover, the case cover is a different image. And
I'm going to do that right now. I didn't notice.
And so this was not mentioned in the story. This was something that I get to bring to the book.
Nice.
And it's a moment that sort of is like, you know, as Sudipta said, like when the cats have gotten where they need to go and the on the tracks perpetrator got where he needed to go, that there's something else there. And there's new friendship. Right. So, and again, with the working together and the teamwork and things like that. So I have this opportunity set before me when I'm working on books like this, is like, how else can I add a little moment in there for kids to discover? So sometimes it's just hidden repetitive imagery in there, extra characters that aren't mentioned in art notes or the story, or because Sudipta and I have four books together, maybe there's a little piece of imagery that has appeared in all the books we've done. So, you know, there's things like that, which is just a little fun, little secret you got to go find, a little treasure.
Hidden treasures. I love that. Thanks treasures. For pointing that out. I mean, you got me on that one. That was fantastic. I love that. Now I'm going to have to look at all the books and see where all the little hidden treasures are.
That's my favorite thing to do. And I think it's because of other books, either when I grew up, that I particularly noticed those things and details, or even when my daughter, I have one child who's an adult now, but when she was young, we had all the books. And I remember Goodnight Gorilla, I think it was. And there's the mouse with the banana, and there was the red balloon and things that aren't mentioned in the story necessarily. But I love that stuff. I love that those hidden treasures. And because kids don't miss a trick at all. And so it's fun to put those things in there. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. They'll call you on it too if you mess up. So I love that. I love how they can find that.
Definitely.
Well, so Sudipta and Lisa, where can people find out more about the book and where you're going to be and your websites, all that wonderful stuff?
Well, you can find out more about me and my books and my website, which is just sudipta.com. Obviously, booksellers everywhere, your local independent bookstore, online, in your library, hopefully in your schools, they'll have some of my books there. I'm very fortunate. I've got a nice pipeline of books coming out in the future. So I'm hopefully going to be in front of my readers for a while. And what were the other things you asked, where they could find out more?
Yeah. Any appearances or anything that's going to be, is that going to be on your website?
It would be on my website if I updated it regularly. I do go to some festivals around the country, not a whole lot, but I'm going to the Chappaqua Festival in the fall in New York State. I'm going to the Humboldt County Book Festival in October, which is in Northern California. So a couple different places that I go. And I also visit schools. And that's where I reach most of my readers personally. I do a lot of school visits, and I go in and I can talk to kids about writing and about finding their own voices.
Fantastic. And Lisa, your website?
My website is lisaworks.com, as is my Instagram handle, which is probably where I live the most and talk about ongoing projects and current projects and things like that. Probably more so, same as Sudipta with my website. I'm still juggling a full-time job, so time is precious and limited. So it's easy for me to just jump on Instagram and do a quick post. And recently I did a book store appearance, which was a lot of fun. Kids were great. And I haven't done one in a while just because of my schedule. So it was really fun to get back into that, to sit down on the mat with them and just, you know, and I take my sketchbooks and they get to go through those and they get stickers and, you know, it's just fun. So I really enjoy that. And we talk about creating characters together and we draw together, which is really nice.
Nice.
So that's pretty much how you find me. And same local independent bookstores and, of course, your library, school library, and things like that.
Yeah, great. Great. Well, we'll definitely get those posted so everybody can keep track of what's going on. And I'd love to attend one of your little inner circles and draw things with you. I probably wouldn't be able to get back up off the mat. But other than that, I would love to be there for sure. But everybody pick up a copy of the book. It's Cats and Conductor Hats, Sudipta Barhan Wallen and Lisa Hernandez. Thank you both for coming on the show so much. Congratulations on your success. And I'll look forward to your editor publishing like a 10 series book, Cats in All Kinds of Hats.
From your lips to her ears. Thank you so much for having us today.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. Our pleasure. I'm glad to have you on.
This was fun.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making the show possible. If you have any questions, comments, ideas for the show, drop us a line. You can go to PetLifeRadio.com, and we'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful shows. It's a cornucopia of cats wearing hats fun. That's at PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.